So perfect opportunity to invite Jim Callis onto the show. Jim, how are you doing, my friend? I've been waiting to pull the Callis card, and it felt like the perfect day to do so because Noah Schultz, White Sox fans, are very excited about what they're anticipating on Tuesday.
No, I mean, they should be. And, you know, aside just from Noah Schultz, you know why I think this is kind of exciting? The White Sox, look, they're not going to contend this year, but they're getting closer to respectability. And I don't think this is, like, if you were just playing 100% for the future, you'd let him stay in AAA for more than 3 starts this year and keep the role going. And, yeah, you could get into the whole, hey, do we mess with service time? But, no, I actually think, you know, we saw the White Sox promote a lot of guys last year. There's going to be guys, Noah Schultz, just the first this year. And I think it speaks well for where this franchise is headed. I think they're going to be respectable this year. You know, I actually don't think they're going to lose 100 games. I think they're going to win more than 70 games, maybe that's 75 range. And I think the willingness to call up Noah Schultz this early in the season kind of speaks to that. I mean, I know they're off to a 5-10 start, but I really do believe better days are ahead.
Jim Callis joining me here on the White Sox Radio Network as we are in a rain delay right now between the Sox and KC. So, Jim, Schultz, you know, the one thing we've talked about it a lot here on the White Sox Network, Brian Bannister, Will Venable, you know, lots of people, Chris Getz throughout the organization have talked about Noah Schultz and how he dealt with a knee issue last year, which really kind of hindered him and put him in a position where he was, you know, compensating for that. And he got right over the winter, and then they saw it in spring training on display. And then what he did in his first 3 appearances, he piggybacked Hagen Smith in that first game. And then the next 2 times out in starts, he was absolutely dominant. I'm completely with you too, because I like that the team is being aggressive with him, because honestly, if you look at the numbers, he had only allowed 6 base runners in his 15 innings of work. You know, clearly he'd kind of mastered AAA, at least it seems that way. So no reason to delay. Let him come up on Tuesday and kind of, you know what? Hey, kid, see what you got. See what you can do against the best. So I am encouraged. And I guess I'll ask you, Jim, you know, because it's inevitable at 6'10", a lefty who, you know, might be able to crack triple digits on the radar here. It's inevitable. The name Randy Johnson is always going to be one of the first names that people comp to Noah Schultz. But what I would point out is, like, we're living in like a completely different era of baseball. So maybe, just maybe, Noah Schultz doesn't need the ramp up period that Randy Johnson needed early in his career. Hopefully Schultz can just come out and be somebody who can be effective in his, you know, early going here.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're right. I mean, 6'10" lefty, I mean, low slot 2 wicket slider. He doesn't throw as consistently hard as Randy Johnson does, but he can get it up there. And, you know, the thing people forget, and I'm not saying he's going to be better than Randy Johnson. I'm not going there. But Randy Johnson, like you were just alluding to, didn't really have a whole lot of consistent big league success until he was 26 years old. Noah's 22. And while Noah was tearing up the minors, Randy Johnson was getting lit up, you know, relatively. You know, he had an ERA over 5 in his career at Southern California. Like he never had the consistency. And I think the thing that has always stood out about Noah from a very young age is his body control and, you know, pitchability. Like, you just don't see, you know, when he was a teenager, when he first came into pro ball, you don't see 6'10" teenagers, you know, especially lefties who seem like they take a little longer to develop, come in and just pound the strike zone like Noah Schultz did for day one. Especially, you know, he's got, you know, we could argue his slider might be the best slider in the minor league. I mean, it just has so much movement. And yeah, he gets chases with it, but he also can throw it enough for strike. You know, it wasn't just, oh, I'm throwing this pitch and I don't have feel for it, or I have a fastball, but I don't know where it's going. Like, it's almost like, for all the, as good as his stuff is and as imposing as his frame is, I think the pitchability stood out. And, you know, even if, let's say, his first taste of the big league doesn't go well for whatever reason and he needs more time in the minors, I think the encouraging thing right now is, you know, we have a guy who, you know, came into pro ball and they kind of handled him carefully. He had a flexor strain and a shoulder strain in his pro debut, so he didn't pitch a whole lot. And then he came out, and I think he was 19 years old, and he was Double-A Southern League Pitcher of the Year in 2024. And you could argue he was best pitching prospect in baseball at that point. He was in that discussion. And then he didn't have a good year last year. And we all know he had the right knee tendonitis. I mean, he pitched well enough in Double A, although he walked a lot more guys than he ever had, and he got knocked around at the end of the year in Triple A. And I think everybody felt White Sox, you know, thus on the media side, okay, it was probably the knee. Mm-hmm. But you want to come out and see the Noah Schultz of old, and we've seen the Noah Schultz of old. I was just looking at a little baseball savant, because you can look up that stuff for Triple A.
Yep.
And when he was getting knocked around in Triple A last year, you know, his slider comes from a low slot. It has so much arm side movement. Glove side movement is what I meant. And last year, Triple A, he was only getting, like I looked at this, it's only 11 inches of movement in Triple A, and the pitch got pounded.
Yeah.
Well, this year, it's back, and he's averaging 16 inches of glove side movement. And what's crazy about him is the slider and curveball break so much to the glove side, and then he throws more sinkers than four seamers, but his sinker and his changeup, which are his probably his least used pitch is his changeup, break in the opposite direction with a ton of movement too. I mean, the difference between where his slider breaks and where his sinker breaks, we're talking like 32 inches. It's almost 3 feet of difference on average where those pitches go. So if you don't pick up right away what's coming out of his hand, you have no chance against that guy. And I don't know how left-handers ever hit the guy, because it looks like he's 6'10 with a low slot. It's like he's delivering the ball from first base. I don't know how anybody stands in against him if you're left-handed.
No, it's a great point. Jim Callis of MLB Pipeline joining me here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network as we're currently in a delay between the Sox and Royals. No, it's a great point, Jim. Honestly, I don't know how many lefties are going to be in many lineups, you know, when Schultz is actually on the mound. You know, maybe the Rays, even the Rays, they're so platoon heavy. He's probably going to see a lot of righties on Tuesday. But it's fascinating to me here. You've got Schultz, and one of the one thing the White Sox can certainly lean on, Jim, and you know this, is their ability to develop hard-throwing lefties. We can go at Chris Sale, Garrett Crochet, you know, that's Carlos Rodon. It's something that they have kind of specialized in, and if you had to pick something, it's like amazing, but they seem to do that really well. So that's a very encouraging thing to know that the White Sox have that type of infrastructure in place, which is all the more reason why someone like Hagen Smith is really intriguing too. Now, we don't know how far away he is quite yet, but he's somebody who White Sox fans are very excited about. What have you seen from Hagen Smith, at least early in the season? Because I know last year wasn't probably the ideal situation. It wasn't exactly how Hagen Smith wanted it to go, but I know the White Sox were encouraged by what they were able to get back to. They were, you know, what they worked on in the winter and getting him back to where he was in his college days playing at Arkansas.
Yeah, it looks like he's building that momentum. And you're right. I mean, last year, it was too early to maybe use the word frightening. But, you know, he got off to a bad start. He wasn't commanding stuff. It seemed like his stuff all ticked down about 2 miles an hour. And, you know, they had to put him on the developmental list. I mean, you don't expect that out of the guy you took fifth overall in the draft, you know, pitched in the SEC, that you wind up putting him on the developmental list to work on his mechanics in the middle of his first full pro season. But he was very good at the end of the year in Birmingham when they won the Southern League Championship. He looked, I saw him a couple times in the Fall League, in the Arizona Fall League, and he looked like, you know, what I'll call Arkansas Hagen Smith. I mean, he was by far the best pitcher in the Arizona Fall League. And again, it's small sample size, but you're encouraged because he's pitched 9 innings, he's walked 3 guys, he's struck out 14. If he has even his stuff, his slider and his fastball are so lively that I don't even think he needs, I mean, yes, you want to see average control. You like to see better than average control, but I actually think he's one of those guys whose stuff is so good that if it's even fringy control, he's going to be fine. And even last year in Birmingham, when he was walking guys, he didn't give up a lot of runs because he's impossible to hit. So it's not as extreme as a Jacob Mizorowski, where Mizorowski, you know, walked about 6 guys per 9 innings in the minors. But if Mizorowski's just around the plate,
yeah,
like nobody hits him. So he can give up. And I think Hagen Smith, while he's not as dramatic like that, like Mizorowski, I think it's the same type of thing. And so far this year, it's been pretty solid control. So it's interesting because, you know, the White Sox obviously have been shuffling through a lot of guys in the rotation already in the season. But the fact that they call up Noah Smith is, Noah Schultz is quick, makes me wonder if we're going to see Hagen Smith sooner rather than later if he keeps pitching as well as he has.
I think it's certainly a possibility. And to your point about Jacob Mesereski, Sox fans got a full, you know, vantage point of that on opening day when he absolutely just dominated the White Sox in that opener. So, you know, just hearing that name, I think it probably gets White Sox fans pretty excited about the possibilities for someone like Hagen Smith. Jim Callis joining me here as we're in the middle of a rain delay on White Sox baseball. Jim, Tanner McDougal, he's somebody who I think White Sox fans have gotten to know recently, but last year he may not have been on the radar for a lot of White Sox fans, but he's somebody as a right-hander who throws really hard, and he has a pretty good relationship with both Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith as he's kind of, over the last two seasons, you know, come up through the minors with them. So I'm curious what White Sox fans can be looking forward to when Tanner McDougal finally gets his crack at the majors.
And that could be soon too, because he's pitching well, and we know Charlotte's not the easiest place to pitch, yeah. And these guys have dominant stuff. And you know, it's funny, like McDougal, he was part of the first draft combine. He had not had a good high school senior season. This back in 21, and he pitched really well at the combine, interviewed really well. You know, White Sox take him in the fifth round. He's an overslot guy. They're real excited about him, and he winds up blowing out in instructional league that October. So he doesn't really get the full season ball to 23. He had a 6 ERA in 2024, and it looked like, okay, this is a guy with a big arm, but, you know, is he ever going to harness it? And, you know, he actually got knocked all the way down to single A during that 2024 season, and he got in better shape that offseason. And I think getting in better shape, if you talk to White Sox, they feel like it helped him get, you know, do a better job of locating his pitches. But, I mean, he's not as famous as Noah or Hagen, but it's pretty dominant stuff too. I mean, he's upper 90s to 101. The one caveat is it's more downhill plane than life, so he's got to locate the fastball well. It can get dead zone a little bit if he's not careful. He's got a high spin curveball that breaks so much that can be hard to land, but it's also impossible to hit. And he's got an upper 80s slider that also has tremendous depth, so he can wipe you out with three pitches. He's kind of similar. It's kind of a similar to a Grant Taylor mold where, you know, it's big velocity, it's overpowering breaking stuff, and, you know, still kind of trying to figure out how to harness it a little bit, but it's a huge arm. He's not a top 100 prospect like the other two guys are, mm-hmm. but he's also not that far off the list. There are not many guys, especially in AAA, who can match Tanner McDougal's stuff.
Jim Callis of MLB Pipeline and MLB Network joining me for a couple minutes here on the White Sox Radio Network as we are currently in a delay between the Sox and Royals. No start time just yet. Jim, so, okay, Sam Antonacci, I know there's reports out there, but that has not been confirmed, so that still may not be necessarily something that's happening just yet, but he looks like he's close, and obviously in the World Baseball Classic with Team Italy, he kind of showed off that high baseball IQ and just the doing all the little things that I think a lot of White Sox fans are encouraged by and hoping to see in the not-too-distant future. So, Sam Antonacci, what have you seen from him, and do you think, since the White Sox have moved him primarily to left field here in Charlotte, do you think he can make the adjustment and handle the corner outfield spot?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's necessarily going to be a Gold Glover, but he, like Sam Antonacci's whole career is about getting the job done. You know, it's interesting. Is there talk that he might be coming up, or is that just rumor?
There's a report out there that has not been confirmed that he actually, you know, could be with on Tuesday. But I'll caution White Sox fans. I think the organization wants to see him kind of get comfortable in left field before they just throw him out there. You know what I mean?
Oh, 100%. And I would say, yeah, you kind of need to do that. I mean, again, you know, they're not trying to win this year, so it's not like they're calling him up because they got to win games right now. And it's very difficult to break into the big leagues learning a new position on the fly. Like, I hate when teams do that. But I would be a little skeptical that they would call him up. And play. I mean, I know the outfield needs some help, but I would be a little surprised by that. Now, that said, he's a very interesting guy. Like, he's an Illinois kid from Heartland, Illinois Community College, or at least Illinois College kid. Heartland, Illinois Community College, he was Division II Player of the Year, went to Coastal Carolina. And he's just, like, and I mean this in a positive way, he's an overachiever. Like, he's not going to wow you with tools. He's got very good bat-to-ball skills, and he finished fourth in the minors and on base percentage last year. Like, he knows the strike zone. He makes contact. And, you know, other than that, I mean, if we're being honest, it's probably springy speed, It's below average power. It's average arm strength. But, like, he's one of those, like, you know, skilled gamer types who knows his game. So he doesn't swing for the fences. He focuses again on base. I said he's a fringy runner, but he's aggressive. He'll steal bases. He'll take extra bases. He's played all over the infield in college. I think he probably fits best at second base. And, again, you know, he's saved by fringy quickness and average arm strength, but it's really good instincts and a good internal clock, so he makes plays. So he's everybody's, I think, favorite, like, overachiever, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Yeah. And when he was in the fall league, like, you know, and I've said this before, kudos to the White Sox. Some teams don't send very good players to the fall league, but that was not the White. We were supposed to get Noah Schultz, and he had the knee, so we didn't get him. But Hagen Smith was there, Ray Montgomery was there, and Sam Antonacci was there. And scouts, like, obviously, Ray Montgomery and Hagen Smith are first-round picks and famous guys. Scouts were just like, you know, pro scouts who had not seen or heard of Sam Antonacci were like, who is this guy? I love him. Just the fact that a lot of times, guys are worn out by the fall league. You're playing baseball into November, and a lot of those guys have never done that. And you'll see guys, and they'll look tired. And everybody remarked that Sam came to the ballpark every day, high energy, ready to go. But all beside that, he just played. And I had one scout. It was an interesting point. I hadn't thought about this way. Everybody pretty much hits in the fall league. Like, the pitching isn't very good. It's a hitter's league. It's set up for hitters to excel. But one scout pointed out to me, he's like, Sam Antonacci hits the good pitchers in this league too. Hmm. Like, he's not just beating up on, you know, 26-year-old guys who are A-ball relievers. Sam Antonacci gets good swings against good players. I don't think he's necessarily the highest ceiling, you know, future all-star.
Yeah.
And when the White Sox are a true contender, he might be, because they have 8 million shortstops, they're going to have to distribute it around the lineup.
Yes.
He may wind up being that really good utility guy.
Yeah.
But he can play. And that guy just keeps exceeding expectations. And, you know, it'll be interesting. Like I said, I mean, I haven't really borne down on the left field aspect. But just given his attitude and tenacity, he'll get the job done. Like, it won't be. I don't think, and I don't mean to, but it won't be Gavin Sheets or Andrew Vaughn in the outfield. Like, he'll make plays. He'll find a way to get the job done.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Jim Callis joining me for another moment here on ESPN 1000 and the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network as we're in a rain delay right now. Sox and Royals, when we get word, we will pass it along, I promise. But in the meantime, a little bit of rain delay theater as we catch you up on what's going on down on the farm in the White Sox organization. So, Jim, you mentioned it, a bazillion shortstops. That is, I think, the best problem to have these days if you're a good baseball team, because, of course, if you have a guy who can handle shortstop or, you know, capably at the worst case scenario, you can move him off of the most difficult position defensively on the diamond and find a spot for him. And the other aspect that White Sox fans are extremely excited about, not just Noah Schultz debuting on Tuesday, but it is the fact that they landed the top pick in the draft lottery this winter, which means I feel like each and every week, Jim, I'm doing a Rock Chalowski update on White Sox Weekly. Don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves because things can change, of course, during the draft process. But he definitely is living up to the billing of one of the top prospects out there. What have you seen from Rock Chalowski here early in the college baseball season? And, you know, do you think it's pretty close to getting to that spot where it's going to be tough for the White Sox not to select him in the amateur draft?
I do. He has lived up to the billing. You know, we said coming into the year, I've talked about him so much too. We do what we call Rock Watch every week on our podcast. I kind of have my routine down. Like, coming into the year, I think he's, you know, the best all-around college shortstop probably since Troy Tulowitzki. He was probably the most preordained number one overall pick coming into a year, probably since Adley Rutschman. Although, like you said, things can change because at one point Carlos Rodon was that guy, and he wound up going to the White Sox with the number three pick in the 2015 draft. But no, he's done everything I think people have hoped. The one knock on his game, if you're nitpicking, is he's probably a fringy to average runner, but he's worked and he's gotten a little quicker this year. But he's just a very polished player on both sides of the ball. We're still 3 months out. Grady Emerson, who's a high school shortstop from Texas, is also very talented. But I don't know if I should be – I was going to say, if I was laying odds, I don't know if I should be laying odds as an MLB.com employee. But I don't know. It feels like it's – like at this point, it feels like, I don't know, 75%, and maybe that's even a little bit light, that it's Rock. And you know, you look at all the shortstops in the system. You know, Billy Carlson, you know, who last year's first round pick was.
Real quick, Jim, because that's exactly the one thing I've grappled with this, right? Doing pre and post for the Sox here. So ultimately, and you always get into trouble because you can't project what's going to happen, but Billy Carlson was so good, is so good with the glove, you know, as a high schooler. You know, a lot of Scott said he's the best glove shortstop they've ever seen. Yeah. So how do you grapple with, okay, again, and we say it's a problem to have.
I've got it all figured out for you.
Give it to me.
Billy Carlson's glove is that good, so he's your shortstop. Colson Montgomery, who had the best home run percentage for rookie shortstop who played in 70 games, he'll go over to third base. He's a big guy. That's fine. Brock Schlowski, number one pick. We're going to put him at second. He's very capable at shortstop, as is Colson, but Billy Carlson is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And Caleb Bonnemer, who's off to another good start after winning the Carolina League MVP award in his debut and looking better defensively than most scouts thought he would. Most scouts thought he was a definite third baseman. Now they're like, no, he's a legit shortstop too. I think he winds up on an outfield corner for you. So that's how we're going to distribute the four. Well, I'm already counting Rock as part of the organization. I don't know where we're putting Landon Tomei, if they can figure out a way to get Landon Tomei in the draft too. Like, we'll find a place for him somewhere.
Locked in. Love it. Jim, as always, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. You're the best in the business when it comes to breaking down the minor leagues and college baseball. So thanks for joining me here during Rain Delay Theater.
Oh, anytime. I'm glad I could fill in a little rain delay and hopefully give White Sox fans optimism for the future. And I do sincerely believe, you know, again, they're not going to contend this year, but I do think they're going to be respectable. And they got a lot of young talent coming. It's going to be fun to watch.